You got to clue it.
What?
I'm going to make a very controversial statement quite early on as well.
Well, watch out for Wilson saying, I prefer this to the original.
not that far, but...
But it could happen.
It could. Who knows? Stay tuned.
Tonight on Willy Vision.
Willy Vision. To me.
Do we still make that?
Welcome back to the Cinemarchery Podcast, episode 13. Unlucky for some, in this case, us fuckers, because it's my choice. You unwrapped chaps, my gift last time.
The unwrapped chaps.
Yeah, the unwrapped chaps, yeah. So, sitting to my right, I have Danger Dave Walker. How are you, Dave?
I'm pretty good, mate. I'm really happy about unwrapping that present.
Yeah, the greatest present ever.
Really happy I bought a DVD player recently.
Oh, mate, come on.
My laser disc player has got a DVD player built in.
Right, just for
even though it never caught on, I'm glad it's part of the package, and I've watched it
just for this eventuality.
Mm.
So, and to my left, it's a man of 1,002 holes, Chris Wilson. How are you?
Yeah, doing fine. I must admit, I just pirated that one. I've kept the DVD in the cellophane. I'm gonna sell it for 50p on eBay.
Sell it sealed. Yeah, you will, sealed, mate.
Brand new
collectors.
You will struggle to get 50p for this. For listeners, it is the 2005 remake of The Fog. It's my choice. It's my idea. Really sorry. Shouldn't have done it. Did do it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think this episode is going to be foghorns and hoos.
Oh, that's unusual for us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something new.
Something new. Right, Rob.
Right. Well, I suppose you wanted me to explain myself.
Yeah, why have you picked it? What's your personal experience with this film? I think it's similar to mine, but please tell me.
Yeah, okay. So I picked this because I feel like, as of late, I've taken it quite easy on all of us with my choices.
I mean.
And so I thought, yeah. So I thought I'd go in fucking hard on this time. And I've tried to watch this film twice before. The first attempt, I got 5 minutes in.
Yep.
Second attempt, I got 15 minutes in.
Yep.
So I thought I had to prove it to myself that I could get through it. And
like Tough Mudder or something, or like...
Yeah, like Tough Mudder, except, you know, it's actual shit. It's like the Shawshank Redemption, but with no redemption, basically.
He just dies in the shit pipe.
Yeah, just shoveling shit for no reason. Yeah,
just like discover his carcass 40 years later, like flies buzzing round.
Exactly that.
Pretty savage, mate. I mean... Because normally you can like, it's a joke because it's a bad film. But I just feel like you're wasting my time.
Well, yeah, I mean...
But I have tried 3 times to see it.
Point of the podcast, though, isn't it?
And now I have seen it, so...
Yeah. So, there is a loose theme to this. So, continuing on from my previous episode, which was My Bloody Valentine,
yes.
In the third dimension, I thought I'd stick with the remakes with... fairly handsome men from fairly popular TV shows
yes.
at the time that the film was made. Yeah. So in this case, we've got Tom Welling off of Smallville.
Yes.
Being sort of pretty fucking boss-eyed.
Oh, yeah. Fake Cillian Murphy.
Fake Cillian Murphy. Sugar Cillian Murphy. to contextualise,
yeah.
This is the remake of the John Carpenter 1980 classic of the same name, of course. Starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Tommy Atkins, another little My Bloody Valentine reference.
Big Tommy Atkins.
Yeah,
big King Tommy of the Atkins. Mustache.
King of the Mountain, mate. Never mind, King of the Mustache. Fuck Jeff Jarrett. That's the original, I think we can all agree, is sort of classic material.
Well, let's wait for controversial opinion penguin over there.
Oh, yeah, we've got a controversial... Do you want to smash this out early doors?
Okay, man, I'm not that asked about the fog. Oh,
Jesus. Fucking hell.
I mean, to be fair, I did watch it back in the day and I really enjoyed it, but when I watched it again as research for a podcast, because I'm quite thorough in that way,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, someone's got to be a professional here, haven't
exactly,
they?
Yeah. For you who obviously can't see us, I'm wearing a tie at the moment.
He is wearing a tie. Yeah.
He's Corporate Willie.
Corporate Willie.
Wearing my horse suit. I watched it again this time, and while I like the atmospheric storm out loud, I just was a bit bored.
Shit the bed.
Interesting.
Interesting is the word. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, wrong would be another word.
Oh, no. He's brought out the wrong card again.
Fucking hell.
I thought we'd killed it in third year. The wrong card is back.
You're wrong.
I'm joking, of course.
Of course.
Everyone's entitled to their
opinion.
Everyone
is entitled to their opinion.
But yeah, so fucking hell, I'm exhausted after that, Wilson. You've really caught me off guard.
Glad we got it out early doors.
Yeah, though. I'm glad we have. I think I might just dive right into this big old turd because there's nothing really much else to contextualise there other than Wilson's completely blown us out of the water with his controversial
opinion.
Well,
he's not said that he prefers this to the original yet, so we'll wait for that.
No, fuck me, let's hope not.
Is spoiler. Nah.
Good lad.
Yeah.
Good lad. Yeah, so in we go. So we start off with the standard issue, pretty fucking uninspiring credit sequence over CGI fog. And then we open with a weird sort of little sequence, a sort of pre-credit sequence almost, of the destruction of the leper boat, sort of.
Now, what I liked here is like literally the first line of dialogue, can you quote that? Was the guy going, "Ooh!" But as I said,
shit, Scooby Doo ghost.
Yeah.
Scooby Doo again.
Scooby Dooby Doo,
where are you? But what's really funny is that, like I said, I pirated this because I didn't want to open your gift because I want to rebox it or something. And it started on the Hindi version, which went for one, "Whoa!"
Kind of fucking wish I'd have watched the Hindi version.
Absolutely.
Now.
हम किससे टकराए पता नहीं लगता है नीचे पानी में कुछ है जल्दी कुछ करो विलियम्स संभल के वेन नीचे पानी में कुछ है उसे हटाओ
So that was a thing that happened and then we get a sort of helicopter shot with the credits still rolling with Fallout Boy.
Because it's the early noughties, so you need a helicopter shot to start your film,
And I mean, Fallout Boy.
And Fallout Boy, Sugar We're Going Down Over, which, as a song in itself, I don't particularly have any issue with. My fucking problem here, lads, is you go and watch the original Fog, and the credit sequence is, in my opinion, one of John Carpenter's best. It's fucking masterful. And the score is beautifully done. It's atmospheric, it's creepy, and it's a nice little montage of weird shit happening in the town.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go from that to Sugar We're Going Down by Fallout Boy.
Yes, mate.
Yeah.
Hey, out there. You've got the one and only Stevie Wayne broadcasting from my own little corner of the world, high in the KAB Lighthouse on Antonio Island. It is perfect weather for this week's dedication of the new statue, honoring the memory of Antonio Bay's founding fathers. So get on down to the town hall and check out the monument to those four brave men. One of whom was my great-great-grandfather, Richard Wayne. Did I already mention that?
David Williams, Patrick Malone, Norman Castle, Richard Wayne. It's all wrong.
Oh, come on, Kathy. Who cares which one's holding the telescope?
It's a spyglass, Tom. David Williams is supposed to be holding the spyglass. He was the visionary.
The thing that struck me right away as well is obviously in the original and the voice, Adrian, I can't read my notes here.
Adrian Barbeau.
Thank you. I've got a name already.
Yeah,
and she's sort of like got that, her voice is quite atmospheric in a way. It's like, you know, late night, quite low.
She sounds like she's singing sweet somethings to you while she's making love and she's eating a box of gravel.
She's like this. Whereas you got Selma Blair here.
Trying to do that. Yeah.
No, not even that. It's just just like, oh, there's a statue coming up that includes my great grandfather. My grandfather could kick your grandfather's ass.
Yeah, it's
really annoying.
It's I'm glad you came right onto that point because the next thing I was going to mention was the fact that she shoehorns in pretty early doors that one of the forefathers, see what they did there, is her great grandfather.
Yeah.
Which I'm just going to throw it out there, lads, is a bit contrived.
Sorry, listeners.
Yes.
Sorry.
It is. Yeah. And in the original, am I right in thinking that... Are there any on-screen cast apart from... I think it's one, isn't there? No, there's two that are related to the original forefathers.
I think Father Malone's one, isn't he?
Yeah, and then there's the...
And was it Janet Leigh?
Janet Leigh.
I think so. It's kind of like... That's kind of a good point, and it sort of exemplifies not just this film, but horror sequels of this kind of time in general, is the need for everything to be boxed in from the past to the present. Everything has to be linked directly. Nothing can happen just fucking because it happens. Everything has to be for a fucking convoluted reason.
Mm. Yeah. And has to be waved in front of you.
Yeah.
It's back to that screenwriting paradigm I was on about in the last episode with The Conjuring. It's just like, everything's got to have meaning and reason right away, and it's got to be really forced, and you've got to make sure all the workings out are right there for everyone to see, because aren't we great at writing stuff?
To be fair, we've just seen Tremors, and that film, hands down, has some of the best foreshadowing and bookmarking of a film ever.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%. But
none of it's cack-handed, none of it's heavy-handed.
No.
But this is...
This is the heaviest of fucking heavy-handed.
Because the character walks on screen and says, hey, I am this.
Yeah.
This going to come in later in the story.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm going to tell you when it does come in, though.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, like, bits of treasure washed up that happen to fall into the hands of key characters. But this is important. This is, you know, watch this, look at this,
see this,
watch... Remember it, guys.
It's such a small town, you just wonder if there's inbreeding going on, if we're all related to each other.
Yeah, just a bit. So we sort of have this fucking bollocks with Selma Blair and her connection.
So on your first attempt, that was as far as you got, wasn't it, or something like that?
This was about as far as I got, because I thought, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, popcorn rating, shit rating, that's as far as I got. It was the Fallout Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Selma Blair giving it that shit about her great-grandfather. I was like, no, bang, game over.
Just fucking chewing it out.
Yeah, so that's the end of my first attempt. I'll tell you when I get to the end of my second attempt as we go. So thereafter, we meet Tom Welling, who I'll refer to as Fisherman Tom for the remainder of this podcast.
Fish Tom.
Yeah, so he's doing a bit of fishing with his mate, who I'm pretty certain at this point is going to die at some point.
Wrong time, wrong place.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Place.
They're on the yeah.
For come on now.
Sake.
Wanker. First joke.
Jesus Christ! It's not getting any better.
Don't get any better.
Oh. Rob's getting a bit crabby over this.
No. God, they're on the seagrass, which is the same boat as the original, the original film. So they've at least remembered that bit.
but it's nowhere Wet Dream from Shark Attack 2. Is
no,
it
is
in terms of boat names.
Still the greatest boat name in history, absolutely. And they have a bit of a to do on the seagrass. They get snagged on treasure. Oh, that's what it looks like to me. A bit of treasure comes loose. Presumably, that's what washes up later. Just really weird. So we do 5 minutes of Tom and his mates on the boat.
Fucking about on a boat. What we were kind of, you know, it tickled our OCD a little bit. Because, like, they're raising this anchor, and the anchor literally spends 25 seconds dragging across the seafloor.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's going to pick something up. That's going to... Oh, treasure.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and the little blokes that they have on their sort of fishing excursion lose their catch and they're a bit disgruntled and never mind. Nobody cares. We don't care.
No.
The audience doesn't care. Fucking why is this here? And then we move on to a sort of panning shot of the waves lapping the beach, and they wash up a skeleton hand, which is 100% my fucking cliche moment of the week.
Absolutely, they're getting a skeleton, mate.
Yeah, fucking ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And also, that was the point by which I switched off on my second viewing.
Really?
Yeah. So, that I think that's about 15 minutes in.
And that was
as far as I got second time round.
Well, it's just so on the fucking nose, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, let's just pick up some Halloween props.
Yeah.
It literally, Haunted Beach.
Looks like a fucking plastic hand like you'd get from Pound Stretcher.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolute gump.
How are you feeling about that, Wilson? You've already gone overboard, haven't you?
Yeah. So far, the film is just kind of... Like I say, it's a waste of time. It's just there.
It's trying to set everything up, but it's just, as you say, so cack-handed.
Stuff is just happening.
Yeah.
And you're like,
fine. There's no emotional investment in there whatsoever. It's just stuff and things.
Yeah.
And a dead dog.
Oh, the dead dog. I thought that was an alright touch. I can't remember.
I mean, it was just kind of a thing that happened, wasn't it?
I thought, something interesting has happened.
Although it felt a bit desperate, though. It's like, how do we make them care? We'll kill a dog.
Fucking shock value. And then out of nowhere, sort of Pokemon style, a wild Maggie Grace appears.
Yes, mate. Fantastic. There we go.
In the middle of a road, just casually hitchhiking. She's just been dropped there.
Yeah. Dare I say the saving grace of this film?
Oh. Pushing it.
Absolutely.
She appears, as I say, out of the long grass.
Yep.
And he's...
Don't go into the long
grass! He's got it.
Just Maggie Grace is coming at you. Like,
exactly, yeah. Thank you. Then our mate Fisherman Tom pulls up.
Absolutely.
Conveniently, the person to be passing by at the time.
Yep, for about 10 minutes from being on screen, I thought, is this Maggie Grace's brother from Lost?
Oh, Ian Somerhalder.
Yeah.
Pale man with bangs, with big, beautiful blue eyes, and handsome stubble.
And tons of charisma.
The other way. Charisma. So she gets in the car, and then after about what feels like about 5 seconds, we get their entire life history together, and that they've got a past, a romantic or otherwise past. She's a bit of a drifter. She's fucked off and left him.
Yeah. Been to New York, big city girl. Now she's come back. Never said where she was going, never said she was coming back. Yeah. Now she's in his car.
I'm going to turn it up on 94.5 KAB, your island alternative to the modern music establishment, playing the music I want to hear.
Direction. Not anymore.
You're not a freak or anything, are you?
Yeah, actually, I am.
Good.
Shit.
So I leave town and you start picking up strange girls on the side of the road.
Elizabeth. No, I recognize you.
I haven't been gone that long, Nick.
I knew it was you. Back.
No place like home.
Well, it took you 6 months to figure that out.
I just need to come back for a while.
Exactly, and this is sort of a riff, obviously, on the hitchhiking scene from the first film, which made more sense because Jamie Lee Curtis was actually from out of town in that film. So now we sort of think that Maggie Grace is going to be playing the Jamie Lee Curtis character, and obviously Tom Welling's supposed to be Big Tommy Atkins.
Beautiful. About 22 years to be... 22 years too young.
Yeah,
yeah. Playing Tommy Atkins, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And she comes across as a bit of a dick, doesn't she?
Yeah, just a bit.
Are we supposed to identify with her?
She does that really well, doesn't she?
Mm.
Yeah.
She just comes across as really unlikable.
Yeah, completely fucking unlikable. Yeah, yeah. And then we're getting all this shit thrown at us, but nothing for more than like 5 seconds at a time. So we have this quick little scene of them two in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we go back to the seagrass again when, in the words of Alan Partridge, Fisherman Tom's mate's having a sexy party.
Sexy party?
On the boat. He's got two ladies there.
Yes, he has.
And another one of the lads. And they're having a bit of a time, aren't they, Wilson? Do you want to take this particular...
I just want to interject here real quick.
Okay.
Because we noticed it straight away. Okay, so the radio station they listen to is very much announced at the start that it is alternative rock music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the only time that there is a black guy listening to this radio He's listening to fucking hip hop music.
Oh shit! I didn't know
it. Is the only time that radio station plays like black music is when he's on the boat going, "Yeah, take off your clothes." Oh, not that much, and you know. Shit. It's really on the nose.
I'm surprised Summer Blair didn't go, "This is a shout out to the one black guy who lives on the island."
He gets we 5 minutes you'll like a day.
Jesus. Fucking hell, yeah. So there's the one black guy on the island.
Who's currently on a boat.
Yeah. And fake Cillian Murphy, because it's his cousin, who looks a lot like Tom Bowen, who looks a lot like Cillian Murphy. Oh, right, it makes sense.
Yep.
And two women having a sexy party on the boat. In the middle of the sea. Oh, gee, I wonder what will happen here. I mean, have you tried turning the boat on in a while to get it moving again? I mean, I wonder what will happen.
Yeah. Classic. Yeah. So what goes off here then, Wilson?
So they're stranded, and it sort of cuts in between, but let me have a look at my notes, because it cuts away, but when it cuts back to the boat, the fog starts coming in.
Yes, yeah, so the fog sort of rolls in towards the boat. All the dials go a bit weird as per the first film. And then everything goes a little bit Friday the 13th all of a sudden.
Yes.
Because the lads, being lads, leave the ladies inside the boat and they go to investigate.
Yep.
About 2.5 seconds later, both of the girls are thrown, again, Friday the 13th style, through the windows of the boat out onto the deck, dead as fuck.
Yeah. He chews them up, spits out the bikinis.
Yep. Whee! Yes, just piss poor, really. Isn't
and
it?
While that's happening, the dramatically convenient knife is in the boat sort of stands upwards on its own.
Oh.
First of all, it makes it look like that someone's going to fall on it, but after building up that, then life has a life of its own. It just, like, basically jumps up and stabs the cousin right in the eye.
Yep. White guy gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Can we talk about the CGI fog, then?
I mean, we better, I suppose.
So, just because you can, don't mean you should. Right. Fog machine with some spooky lights on it. First film. Undeniably creepy.
Yeah.
Because it just moves how it wants to. And it's plainly a fog machine, but it's fine.
Yep.
I don't need to get a POV of the fog moving around the entire boat.
No, no.
And then, like, moving into someone's ear or some shit. Or, like, I don't need to see it going through floorboards.
Yeah.
I just fucking just waft some smoking.
And do you know how in the original film, when the fog retreats or moves back from anywhere, like at the end of the film, or like when it sort of comes to life and it feels a bit more unnatural and it moves in that weird way, it's because they filmed it with the fog machine and then stuck it in reverse.
Yes, mate.
What the fuck's wrong with that?
It's perfectly fine.
Yeah, but it's not computers, though, is it? You know,
you've got to use these computers.
Yeah, we've got to use computers. Yeah.
In 2005, things work a little differently.
It just... It really takes me out of it when I know there's not a cameraman doing that.
Yeah.
When I know that, because I know that it's not real. Like, you guys probably haven't seen it yet. The new Godzilla film, everything is shot from cameraman height, even though it's a CGI monster.
Mm.
Don't need to do that. You can fly around it if you want.
Yeah. Is this the...
Shin Godzilla, the Japanese one.
Right, no.
I didn't think about the...
Everything is... To be fair, even the one with Eisenberg in it, even that's always looking up.
Yeah.
But, like, the new one is everything shot from what a guy on a tripod would see.
Yeah.
And therefore makes it more real.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's not hard.
It's human eyeline.
It's not hard.
No.
But the CGI complaints, I don't think, are going to stop with the fog itself, are they?
Oh, no.
As we go along.
Right, I'm done with the fog now. Go on.
Yeah. And while the boat scene's happening as well, first of all, introduced to Dan the Weatherman, bearing in mind him later on. Just basically saying, there's a bit of fog coming. And meanwhile...
Watch out, fog's about.
And meanwhile, Shannon from Lost says that she doesn't belong on this island.
But she had to go back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is why she was killed off in season one, if she doesn't belong on the island.
Spoilers!
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, God. We was over. Sorry, Wilson, you carry on, mate.
But I was about to say, because she and her fake Cillian Murphy are driving along, and the streetlights are going off conveniently just behind them as they're driving past, and the fog starts smashing every bit of glass in sight.
Absolutely. It does.
Just
it
because
does.
It can.
Just yeah. because it can.
Exactly, yeah. And then after that, we're early doors the next morning, I think, when we're introduced to a weird metal detector guy.
Who's doing weird metal detector.
Yeah, he's doing a bit of metal detecting on the beach.
Yep.
And he comes across a weird little watch type thing, like a pocket watch.
Yeah, pocket watch. Yeah,
which
yeah.
he gives to Maggie Grace at complete random.
Yes.
Despite the fact he's never met her before. And if you were a metal detectory person, if that's something you did as a hobby, and you found like this really nice, ornate, couple hundred year old pocket watch that was still ticking.
Yeah.
Would you give that to some strange woman?
But he's conveniently kooky to move the plot forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Can we give him a mental handicap? What kind of mental handicap? One that basically makes him move the story forward. Can you just give things to MacGuffins to people?
It's kind of the lowest, laziest common denominator.
Yeah, yeah. And about halfway through, can we get him to say the legend of the town, just so everyone remembers?
Yeah. I mean, because realistically, real life, he'd just sell it for scrap, wouldn't he?
He'd scrap it, eBay it.
He'd not fucking give it to Maggie Grace, would he? Do you know what I mean? Fuck all that noise.
Yeah, you sour-looking bitch. Yeah. Just fucking do what you want with this.
You know the difference between flotsam and jetsam?
Macon.
Some people get washed up on shore. Some bob around at sea forever. You used to be Elizabeth.
I still am.
I have something to show you. If you touch it, things will change.
Still ticking.
It wasn't ticking before.
Where'd you get it?
Let me see. Came back.
Sooner or later, everything does. Do you have a lighter? It's a hallmark. It tells where a piece was made and roughly when. Looks familiar.
Elizabeth.
Farewell, Elizabeth.
What was that about?
You found a watch on the beach.
That guy gives me the creeps.
I know it sounds crazy, but I felt like I'd seen it somewhere before.
And I don't know if I've missed a bit here, but the next note I've got here is, why is Jamiroquai on the soundtrack, ?
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, the song feels just like it should, and it feels just like it shouldn't have fucking been there, mate. Do you know what I mean?
What kind of radio station is this?
It's a kooky, edgy,
it's just 2005
one.
Whatever's in Soma Blair's head at the time.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like, oh shit, I've got my FIFA catchphrase in my head, better stick it on. Anyway.
It feels like what happened with the soundtrack and the music they used is whatever came in to the director who is the chap who directed the film Stigmata. That was his most well-known film.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Whatever came into his head on the journey into work that day, I think fucking ended up
or
in it.
Whichever record company offered him money first.
Yeah, yeah, either or.
Just a quick aside, if we should mention Stigmata. Stigmata is the first ever film that it's taken me about an hour and a half into a rewatch before I realised I'd seen it before.
It was that memorable. Yeah.
It was just I sort of recognise this scene here. And this was back when I used to use a site called Letterboxd. So I had a search through it and I realised, I watched it again in 2016. I watched it in 2013. Just completely forgot about it. So when I realised it was him, I knew this was going to be a good film.
Yeah.
I rewatched Stigmata fairly recently, actually, just by coinciding. And I thought it was... I saw it years and years and years ago, and I thought... I remember it being quite good. But, you know, in that, like, when you're 13 and you watch something... Yeah.
When you're 13, everything's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I watched it again. It's fucking not very good, is it?
No.
It's no End of Days.
No, it's
but
not.
Then again, what is?
Exactly, yeah. It's no Wicker Man, is
oh,
it?
Oh, I'm an angel!
Got it!
Yes!
Fucking good old Ardy. So... Moving back to the fog. See what I did there?
Yeah. There's something in the fog.
There we go, yeah. Someone says that, don't they?
I know they do.
Fucking joke. Yeah, but we're introduced to Father Malone, who is quite young and quite rambly and quite pissed.
Yeah.
Thoughts on this one, Dave?
I can't remember, mate. I watched the original straight afterwards.
So there you go, mate.
I've kind of put it out of my head. I know that he was younger.
He was younger.
He was weird, yeah.
And completely unmemorable, so you're probably right there.
I'm getting him confused with the pocket watch guy, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, he appears very early on when Shannon from Lost is walking around the graveyard and there's a bit of vandalism, I believe, and is rambling on. Oh, is that a bit of... No, that's a bit later, sorry. Now I'm getting confused, but he just basically disappears for a good 45 minutes of the film.
That's it, I don't remember him being in that much.
He rambles about a curse a bit, which is a bit contrived. Again, just giving his little spoon feed as to what's going on in the background. Then he fucks off for ages and he comes back in the last act again, but he's just basically, I like to think, he's staggering around pissed the whole time.
Just the whole film trying to talk to people.
Yeah, like Fisherman Tom's mate happens upon him on the dock towards the end of the second act, and then it brings him back into it again. Don't know if he's been sat there for the entire time just
walking around trying to give people exposition, and they keep shutting their doors on him.
Yeah, basically, exactly. So yeah, we've what are we on to here? Maggie Grace's mummy issues. I've got next.
Oh yeah, that's fucking weird as well.
Yeah, he turns up to the house. Oh, you should have said something if you were coming home. Didn't wanna.
Yeah.
Scene.
Cool.
Hi. Bye.
Yeah. That's it. Done. Next.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we're relying on some really fucking hokey tropes here and really cack-handed ways of trying to flavour character, and that sort of juxtaposed with the horror elements themselves.
Yeah.
That are like stupid little jumps for the sake. Yeah. There is no for a film that is whether you like the original or not.
Yeah.
For a film that. A remake of a film that was all about suspense and slow build and atmosphere, and maybe that's why you think it is maybe a bit boring, because it is all about that slow build. This is just like, this is suspenseless, completely suspenseless.
It's a bit like a chef trying to add seasoning by adding cardboard to recipe.
More flour.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely devoid of personality, and everyone in it is therefore completely devoid of personality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even like the town itself, it's so generic.
Yeah.
Whereas you can say in the original, at least it had character, you know, it had the lighthouse and everything. Yeah. There's just like a certain atmosphere about the original, which you know, I did quite enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Midwestern towns have an effortless level of characterization in them, like in The Fog, like in The Wicker Man, which is basically a Midwestern town village.
Yeah, it's harder to make these things.
Yeah,
you know, it's harder to take the character out of these settings than put it in. It's very, very strange. I mean, this for me, it's a bit like going to a restaurant for a nice meal and being served a pot noodle.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, sorry, then take the seasoning pot away.
And the kettle, it doesn't work, so you just have to pour cold on it.
Yes. Yeah, or milk.
Oh, so quite tragic, isn't it?
Lovely.
Mm.
Shall we go to the next bit where Shannon from Lost, she's having really weird dreams, basically flashing back to everyone burning in the... opening sequence.
Yes,
we can do. But about that. Can I just dive in on one thing that I just want to point out?
Yes, mate.
Or just have a little bit of a fucking pop up before that.
Okay.
When they get back into Fisherman Tom's car to go for, you know, back to his place,
for a pot noodle,
in his words, and I've written this down, and somebody, a screenwriter, actually wrote this, and it was actually performed on set, and no one stopped them.
Mm.
And he says, "Should we go back to my place for some wild and crazy sex?" Exact quote. Who fucking wrote that shit?
Nice.
I could only dream of writing that sort of shit.
Can you imagine if they said a rummage, though?
That would have been better, wouldn't it?
Come back to my place for a fucking rummage.
I'm available for hire.
For a rummage, or?
Yeah, for both.
Exactly, yeah.
So screenwriting, a rummage, I don't know.
Any of the
above. A quick hand job, I don't know.
So, yeah, anyway, sorry, I just had to
that's pick, all right, mate.
Pick fault with that. Yeah. But on you go, Chris Wilson. Sorry.
So after the wild sex or what have you, she has some dreams which are just basically flashbacks to the people burning, the boat burning, the town burning, whatever the fuck it was burning at the beginning.
Burning, man.
Yeah, I mean, got to make use out of that budget for the CGI on those 2005 computers of iMovie fire everywhere.
Yeah.
So she wakes up. What relevance does this have? Well, we'll find out later on, I guess.
We'll find out later, yeah.
You see, I thought with this that it was the pocket watch that had given her some kind of psychic... Yeah. I mean, that's fucking shit as well.
Yeah, but... because there's like all sorts of weird symbols on the watch, which is what she goes on to next when she tries Googling it.
Yeah.
But not Googling it, because they couldn't get the copyright to Google.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And but for some reason, the computer glitches, and there's dramatically convenient damp coming in from the roof.
Yeah,
like little droplets of water.
This is the only sequence of the film that I thought had any suspense to it whatsoever, and the only sequence of the film that I thought was quite well done.
Mm. Did anyone else feel like this was an underwear advert?
Yeah, oh yeah, with the ridiculous ass shot with the camera at like...
And the cleavage shots.
Just unnecessary. I mean, that side of it, fucking rubbish, but the bit of her following the footsteps on the ceiling,
yeah.
I thought was quite nicely done.
Yeah, some of it's quite nice, quite tense. Yeah,
just trying to pick out some positives, because I know this is, as we say, my fault.
Yeah. No, I'm all on board with that scene. Yeah. The underwear advert and the suspense stuff was fine.
Apart from the bit when she goes outside in her pants for no fucking reason, you wouldn't do that, would you? Would you? No.
Depends if it's the summer.
Well, maybe. Yeah. It's foggy, though, isn't it? It's a bit damp.
Well, you don't know if you've like got a cold front and warm air.
Might be a wet heat, mate. Might be a wet heat.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, the result of that is... The result of that is just that Tom Welling creeps up behind her for a really shit naff fucking
boom
scare.
Hand on shoulder.
Terrible. Yeah. So that shit happens. And then we meet something that I think we're starting to develop as a theme in this podcast.
Mm.
Yeah.
The annoying fucking child.
Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, gotta love that annoying child.
Yeah, fuck me. This
one. Doesn't want a gut pounder and a can of Coke, does he?
Yeah, I mean, it's no fucking kid from The Mummy Returns, is it? It's no fucking Short Round.
No, it's not.
He is quite annoying all the same.
He's still quite an obnoxious shit. Although I was quite amazed, actually, because I saw the age of Selma Blair, how old she looked, and I thought, well, she's clearly not got a kid in this one.
It's quite confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Matey Boy's only about 12 as well.
Yeah, and she looks about 25, so unless she's getting that Grimsby pregnancy average age, in there.
Well, I thought that as well, and I've got to sort of defend him slightly, because I give it a cheeky Google, and I worked it backwards, and Selma Blair, when they made this film, was about 33.
Fuck off.
No, straight up.
Mm.
Straight up.
Well,
yeah, Maggie Grace was 22, unbelievably. But, yeah, she was about 33, so
okay. Fair enough. I'll give him that. But
yeah.
She does look younger, though, and I think what leads you to that impression is the music she plays on a radio station.
Yeah.
Which is entirely...
I think what we're forgetting is that this film is young mum empowerment, and you're all cunts for bringing her down.
And put Fall Out Boy back on.
Yeah.
So she's like going through a mid-30s crisis. Is she like just getting into emo at age 33?
She skateboards home, does she?
Yeah. He goes home, listens to a bit of My Chemical Romance.
Jesus.
Yeah. So yeah,
she's just got like the fucking ridiculous jacket that well.
Couldn't get into the Black Parade because her dad wouldn't take her.
No, yeah. She's got the right hair colour for it, though, hasn't she?
She has, yeah.
So maybe there is something in that. But alas, we're introduced to a son who... His first act is to gift his mother, while she's half asleep, a fucking manky old airbrush that he's just found on the beach. I mean, as presents go, it's not fucking great,
It reminds me of, like, when your pet cat comes in with, like, a frog chewed up in its mouth. It's like, oh, I gave you this. Like, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks for this piece of shit. I'll treasure it. So yeah, but that's obviously another.
I'll put it on the fridge, sweetheart.
Put it on the fridge next to the fucking other shit that you brought me in last week. But yeah, it's another piece of the past, basically.
A little memoir from the ship, innit?
Conveniently washed up.
Some rocks. It's heavy. Feel.
Thanks for this piece of shit.
Looks like it must have been
somebody's hairbrush once upon a time. I'm gonna make you some breakfast.
No, I want to go back down to the beach.
Fine, just a half an hour, okay? I have to go into work early. I have a very busy day.
Can I come to the station with you?
No, not today, hon. I have too much work to do, but maybe later in the week, okay?
What I think's interesting to note is that whenever these things washed up, like the old guy, when he finds the watch, is surprised by the watch. And when Maggie Grace looks into the watch, she's surprised by it. When Selma Blair gets given the hairbrush, she's surprised by it, which suggests to me that this kind of shit doesn't happen very often. Now, far be it for me to use the C-bomb twice in such a short period, but it is a bit contrived that all this shit's suddenly finding its way to show.
Sorry, listeners.
Shazza. Yeah.
Watch a podcast. Don't worry about it.
I don't understand.
Is it plants?
No.
Not that kind of pod.
Oh, God. So, yeah, we're kind of...
Don't ask me what happens next.
Don't ask me what happens next. I've got notes on it, mate. Wilson, what happens next?
Okie dokie. Shannon from Lost, she visits the statue, she goes to a museum where her mum is again, and I think this is where Father Malone is
right,
again, yeah. Hanging around.
Yeah.
Is there again, a running joke that they've got the statues wrong here? One of them's supposed to be holding a spyglass, but yeah, he's not.
There is, like, a couple of, like, the committee that organises the statue are, like, moaning about it. But, again, with a signpost, it's just, it's so fucking obvious that the finale is going to happen in this museum.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, why don't you just, like, call it the finale museum?
Yeah, yes. And you're waiting for the shot of the fog rolling in over that statue and fucking it up. Yeah. I wonder if that'll happen.
Who knows?
Spoilers. Course it does.
Yeah, but she goes to the museum to do more research because books are a bit harder to damage if you get water on them.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Never mind.
That is true. That is a fact.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we sort of, like, get a bit of a one-off scene where fake Cillian Murphy and Selma Blair meet. Now, much of you caught it, but when Cillian and the only black guy on the island were talking earlier on, with the radio in the background, he sort of implies that they've sort of rummaged a bit before.
Yeah, they've had a rummage, haven't they?
So they walk up and say, "Hi, how are you?" "Yeah, I'm good." "Okay, bye." That's the scene, and that's the only real interaction we get between the two until the skirmish later on. It's like
there's an implied history, but they're not that interested in each other.
It's never followed up on either, other than that one little bit.
I kind of interpreted it as, I gave him the benefit of the doubt and assumed that he was being evasive.
But if she said, "Oh, your girl's back in town then," like, awkward.
A bit awkward.
I'd offer you.
Awkward, yes. And then not long after, I think, do we start looking for seagrass then?
They hear that there's been shit that's happened on the seagrass, so out to see fake Cillian Murphy and Shannon from Lost go.
This was my favourite bit of the film, in a way, fucking how best to describe. Fisherman Tom and Maggie Grace,
Fishy Tom,
nip off to look for the seagrass.
Yes.
And of course, as we've established, this is an island, it's a fishing island.
Yep.
There's quite a lot of water around the island where one might fish.
Yes.
The search for the seagrass takes about 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, pretty good.
And that they find it straight away, and I just think that is, like, it fucking cracked me up when I watched it. Cause I thought, come on, guys, can we not at least make something of the drama of trying to find the boat? No, fuck it, there it is. Great, let's get on board.
Piece of piss, right.
What's happening?
Next plot point, move.
So, yeah, so they mooch onto the boat and they quickly find... Sorry, Dave, you carry on. You crack your...
Crack the beer open.
We'll cover for you. Shh, come on with some cover for him.
Right.
Anyway, back on the boat, we're having a mooch round, and we very quickly find the bodies of his mate, the guy that gets the knife.
Black guy was in the fridge, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Our second freezer geezer.
Oh, he be chilling.
Yeah.
I'm building to that, lads. Sorry. Have some fucking patience.
Sorry, all right.
Sorry, first, I'm just so excited about freezer action.
Freezer geezer, we'll get to him in a sec. So, they find his mate with the knife through his eye first, and then Maggie Grace with her already well-developed and character arc of being good at sea and obviously having a fishing background that he never once referred to or even suggested, manages to single-handedly winch up the fishing bag thing, out comes the bag with all the fish in it and two bodies.
Ah, oh, piece of piss. It's all computerized.
So she's just done that, and then off she pops downstairs to find your mate Wilson, the freezer geezer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on, you have it then.
Well, he finds him, and you sort of think, well, he's a bit dead and frozen. Then his eyes open. And so back on land again.
Well, no, can I just point out when they're in this boat and they're doing their awful exposition with each other, the lighting is really cool.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Because everything's top lit from above.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But the lights are kind of rocking.
Yes.
So they go from in and out of shadow and it's quite nice.
Right.
It's also blatantly a lazy attempt filming on a soundstage, to make it look like the boat's moving. But it did happen to look really cool.
Yeah, it did look good. I mean, it is an attempt to replicate the scene from the original, isn't it? Where there's the weird... But again, you see, what they've done is... they've sort of... I think what they've done is they've watched the original, but not really watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got the outline of the scenes, but then they've missed all the nuances and the detail that make the suspense.
It's just
like
on in the background. Yeah. Mm.
Like in that scene, for example, in the original film, there's that movement of the handle beforehand that the viewer sees, the handle turns, but Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't see. But there's none of that here. It's fucking wham bam thank you, man.
Mm. Yeah.
It's moving it, like you said, Dave, it's moving it along to the next plot point as quickly as possible at the cost of any kind of tension or suspense.
Back on land, Willie.
Yeah, back on land then. The only black guy on the island.
Yep.
He's upon a stretcher, and but at the same time he's arrested because he's the last guy alive.
Yes.
So they go straight to, yeah, you've done it, which is a bit racist.
It's
probably
a bit racist, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just about to say that exact same thing.
We found a survivor. Ah, black, eh? arrest that man.
He's up to no good.
Turn him to the stretcher.
So away he goes. Meanwhile, in another random scene, Dan the weatherman has bought Selma Blair a webcam.
Nice.
Kinky.
Yes,
yeah.
He has. Yeah. Can I just go back? Just sorry, one more thing in the harbour, which really caught my eye.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed it when you watched it or not. There's a fat harbour guy that works, obviously at the port, and you meet him for the first time when they go out and come back to find the seagrass, and he's got. It looks like he's had his face cut up. And he's got and he's got like plasters on it, and then later on, from plasters off, and he looks like his face has been ripped, but that is never questioned.
I managed to make a connection with it.
Go on.
Later on, we're going to have to get to that part and refresh my mind, but we had to figure it out. We had to get the fucking plot point cards out.
Right, but there's a reason for that.
We think there was a reason.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
We think that he's connected to the people on the boat, and it's manifesting in him as he's like an ancestor or some shit like
that. Oh, okay. That sounds painful. Yeah, yeah. Look forward to that at the end.
Yeah.
Sorry. On you go, Chris. Sorry.
The next bit, Shannon from Lost, even though she's clearly got evidence that the only black guy on the island is innocent by the camera footage.
Yes.
She basically sits there on her own in, I can't even describe where it is. It's like fake Cillian Murphy's boathouse or something.
Yeah, it's a boathouse.
It's just like sat there watching it, you know, instead of, you know, submitting it as evidence.
Yeah, as they do.
Fuck's sake, Shannon. And then a really weird, I'm not sure if I missed something, but there's like basically a hole in the ground and she walks along a plank and she just slips over and falls into the water.
And drops the camera.
And drops the camera while she does it. And I thought, surely there'd be something like dragging her down, but now she just fucking slips, doesn't she?
She just fell in. It was. I think that was just a convenient way to lose that evidence before she could potentially do anything with it. It was very strange. But in the course of that sequence, where she's flailing around and fannying about in the water, she makes a discovery of a book in the wall.
Which is
originally the discovery made by Father Malone in the first film when he's had a few. Yeah, the start of the film, exactly. Right at the very start in the church, which is one of the key locations of the first film. In fact, the climax of the film's in the church. But the church is never seen in this film at all.
No.
Because Father Malone's just out and about on the beers.
getting fucked up and pissing people off.
He's never in the church. That idea of the original Father Malone's journal being found and that being a key to unravelling the past is transposed into a brick in a tank in a shed.
In the middle of nowhere. So we keep doing this thing where they're just doing shit for the sake of it. And it's plot convenient. Like when radio lady gets a webcam. You know later on someone's going to get killed on the other end of that webcam. When she falls in the water, you know that someone's going to be plot relevant there.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's just no need. Is it contrived?
It's all, the whole thing's contrived.
I go even worse. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
There's no other way of describing it. I mean, in terms of pure logic, it makes no sense to carry on. It's a massive coincidence. Mm-hmm. But these cliches, pin in the haystack sort of luck that should find that book wherever it is.
Yeah. You know, it's supposed to be spooky and divine powers and stuff.
It's
just a fucking mess.
Yeah. And just to bear in mind, while she's drowning, she flashes back to a woman from the beginning of a film in 18, correct. What have you, flashing back. Mm-hmm. It's her, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or is it?
With leprosy or not, because no one wants to say leprosy in this film.
No.
It's a boat full of people that look a bit weird.
Yeah, basically. And I think the thing is, at this stage, it's clear that we're just lurching between one fucking horror movie cliche to another. There's no thought outside of this is how it's done in this genre, let's just do this. It's so painfully fucking lazy. It's probably one of the laziest films I've ever seen my life.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's just drawing dots between plot points.
Yeah.
Done, fell down a well. Oh, plot point down there, done.
Just third act. Yeah. It's just fucking...
By the numbers, mate.
By the numbers is the word, isn't it?
It's turning pages in that script.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, I think it was... I don't think they had a script. I think they had do you remember Dr. Dot books?
Yes.
They had when you were a kid. I think they published another series of them. And they just books
some
about...
Some storyboards. What do I say? I don't fucking care. Just pull that brick out, love.
Say something about having wild sex. That's what teenage people like to hear. That's our demographic. Fuck's sake. So yeah, the contrivance of finding the book aside, we was off next to super spooky things happening at Stevie's studio with their hairbrush going up in smoke and burning weird fucking symbols of scales into the wall.
Yes,
this was also just stupid.
Just dumb as fuck. As soon as that fire started, Eleanor started shouting, whatever you do, don't fucking burn the symbols into the wall. Don't burn the symbols into the wall. That's so fucking naff and cheap. Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah. Fuck's sake.
Well, she's not wrong.
No, she's not wrong, because it just happened. Isn't it? Oh, man. I think, are the symbols scales? So they're East India Company, aren't they? So that's basically a trading ship.
Yeah.
I mean, the scales are sort of explained a little bit later on, where basically their sins have been weighed and they found wanting, I think, is the line that's used. It's some shit to do with that. It's really, really fucking bolted on again and lowest common denominator bullshit. Mm. but yeah, again, there's more glitching. You see Dane again on this computer screen like we did earlier with Maggie Grace.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bit fucking bland, isn't it? If this was a Dulux colour chart, if you went to, you know, B&Q or Wix, other retailers are available, and you wanted to paint your room, say you wanted to paint the studio we currently sit in, okay? You might go for...
I fancy beige, but I want to spice it up with some magnolia.
Exactly. Well, this film would be fucking magnolia on the colour chart. There's no burnt sierra here. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking absolutely like... cheap rental student house cover-up job.
Yes, mate, absolutely.
Of a film.
From experience.
Yeah, from experience. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Then we get a repeat of Selma Blair calling a kid up, asking where did you find this... where do you find this object on the beach?
Yeah.
Don't go on the beach. And whereas in the original, the kid went, yeah, okay, fine. And then that was that.
Sound mum, sorry, I won't do it again.
Yeah. This time, it's like, okay, mum. Right, I'm off to the beach. Bye.
And then after that, we pop off again to our mate Fiver Malone, who, like, to go in fitting with the sort of underlying emo themes of this film, is just bumbling around a graveyard on his own for no reason with a bottle of whiskey in his hand. Like, I couldn't make this shit up. Well, I could. It'd take about 2 seconds for a 7-year-old to make this up. But then Maggie Grace happens upon him in the graveyard, asks him about the journal, and he doesn't really give a shit. He gets very defensive and just tells her to leave the island without further explanation.
Yeah.
Super spooky. Such a mysterious character.
Yes.
But so cracking time we are, lads. Proper cracking time.
Oh, God, yeah, I know, yeah. I mean, I'm aware of the fact I am responsible, but at the same time...
See, I was going to re-watch this as a refresher.
Yeah.
Because I watched it about a month ago, and like I say, I watched the original straight away afterwards to sort of cleanse the palate a bit. And then I realised, well, there's some sandpaper I've got in a drawer I could be licking.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Some cat litter to be eating, you know what I mean?
I should have...
be dragging my balls across broken glass.
You could be. But... I should have gone with my original two instincts. On this film.
Yeah.
But you know what? Fuck it. I do regret it. I'm sorry to both of you, but...
Point of the podcast.
Yeah. Don't know about that.
Yeah.
there's been some good films so far.
There has, but you know... Yeah.
But you just keep picking the shit ones.
Do I keep picking the shit ones?
Wilson.
My Bloody Valentine 3D mate, Jason X.
Fair point.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next scene.
So at the hospital then, Shannon from Lost, well, first of all, she quickly goes to see the only black guy on the island.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Under surveillance, like a constant watch, because he might, you know,
he might get out and steal some wallets.
Yeah, maybe. Hijack a car or something. Go listen to hip hop. I don't know.
We'll just point out, we are kind of getting into third act territory here, aren't we?
We're approaching it.
In the original, this is all first act.
Yeah, all this shit's out of the way now for an hour.
Yeah. Whereas here, we've got... she goes, has a wander around, and all the dead bodies from the boat, I believe. So yes, it'll be the two bikini girls and fake Cillian Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
They come back from the dead.
Yes.
And they scream something about blood for blood.
Yeah,
they do, and then they die.
Yep.
Yeah. Again, this is a really good example for comparison between the two films again, because this film, the scene in the original, the first time I watched it, it's fucking creepy as balls.
Yes,
really,
mate.
Fucking creepy and really effectively done.
Yeah.
And basically, what happens in the original is it's one guy, he doesn't say anything, he falls over behind Jamie Lee Curtis, there's no physical contact, and he carves something into the floor, which is, it kind of increases the suspense and mystery because we don't know what it is. And in this film, it's expanded upon such a degree where there's interaction, there's physical contact.
And there's now three of them.
And they're delivering dialogue. I mean, that's just a perfect encapsulation of this spoon-feeding bullshit.
Yeah. It's like, what's it doing? Well, it's just kind of walking around and being scary. Can it give any dialogue and exposition? I mean, it's a wardrobe. Yeah, it could do, though, can it? Can we have it set fire and then just leave ashes on the floor that say something? You know what I mean? It's just any opportunity they get.
It's like your annoying teenage nephew's been let loose with 25 million quid to make a film, is what's happened here.
Yes, mate, that is what's happening here, yeah.
So, yeah, after that fucking bullshit, we move on to metal detector bloke again.
Oh, fantastic.
He's at it again on the beach.
Yep.
Waves are pretty high this time.
Yep.
And he's detecting, and he finds a metal sort of hook thing attached to a big old fucking bit of rope. Then he's pulling this rope, and it's getting longer and longer and longer, and he's going out to sea with it.
Do like this image.
It is nicely done at the first.
Mm. Yeah.
But it goes a bit wrong when the fucking kid tips up.
Yeah.
So the kid stood there and he's just sort of gawping at this guy getting dragged into the sea. And then he, like you say, the imagery is nice, but at the same time, he fucking pancakes it into the sea. Uh-huh. And I couldn't help but have a little titter to my mouth.
Everything's fine until that point. You just want him to keep dragging and dragging and dragging until he's going under and then drowning.
Yeah.
And
exactly. Yeah. And it's the fall in.
Just to go back slightly, did they ever explain why there's a dinner table set up on the beach?
No.
Okay.
Oh, man.
No. Because it's spooky, yo. That's the only reason.
I know it came first, but it just reminded me of the album cover for Muse's fourth album.
There we go, Muse again.
Yeah.
Muse's fourth album, which one's that?
Black Holes and Revelations.
Black Holes and Revelations.
Yeah, it's for dinner table, like four aliens. It's close to be on Mars.
Yeah. The last good album Muse did.
Yeah.
Guys.
No, I agree with him, actually.
That's all right, then. Yeah. I was going to say it's not actually acceptable to like Muse in 2018, but that's
fine. I know it's not, but I like for three albums. Absolution, Black Holes and Revelations.
They're all good, they're all great.
Yeah, for the rest of it, nah.
Nah,
fam. No. I used to sort of like the album afterwards, but
yeah. Just Pendulum for Children,
basically. Yeah.
Jesus, that's fucking ruthless.
Nigga down.
Poor Muse. Sorry, guys, regular listeners.
Where the fuck were we?
We're on
dead bodies in the morgue.
Yeah, so metal detector bloke.
Yep,
he's done his thing.
Yep,
kids watched him die.
Oh yeah, and then the kid runs back out running the fog.
Yeah,
and then when he goes in, he locks the door behind him, and the babysitter has a quick look outside, and she goes, "Oh my!" Scene.
Well, the babysitter has a look outside in the original and says, "Oh my!" as well.
Yeah, but no, her execution here was like, "Oh my!"
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Like Mrs. Kobritz did a storming performance.
Yes, she did.
Ooh.
Mrs. Kobritz or Mrs. Doubtfire, can't tell.
No, one of the two.
Struggling to tell, like.
Hello!
Oh, it's foggy! she does a bit of that, you say.
Shall we go back to Dan on his webcam?
Yes.
Dan the webcam man.
This is intercut, isn't it, with the stuff happening at the house with the child.
Yeah.
And the babysitter. Go back to the man on his webcam, Wilson.
He accidentally sets himself on fire.
That shit.
I wouldn't you know it, the webcam's on at the time, so Selma Blair can watch it all happen.
Yeah, he comes flying back through the doors.
He does, yeah. He has a quick look outside, what's going on? Is that a fog? I should investigate further. Suddenly, set on fire, launched backwards, which I just thought was hilarious. I think it's supposed to be scary. It was just like...
It was fucking funny, man. Yeah. He was on fire and everything.
Yeah. I find the crash test dummy thing sort of hilarious. Just like so needless.
But again, with the advantage we've got here, with this and some... versus some of the remakes that we've got, is this is actually, in parts, quite a close remake of the original, so we can compare things a little bit more. This scene in the original... Charles Cyphers, who plays Weatherman, is really effectively done because he sort of goes outside and he gets hooked, but you don't really see much else of it. And it's that whole, it just encapsulates the idea of a sort of suspenseful horror kill that's quite relatively classily done versus a guy accidentally setting himself on fire, then getting thrown back through a door.
Or while someone else is watching us.
Yeah, while someone's watching. Yeah.
It's one extreme to the other, in the worst way.
Yeah, just give me a second here, all right?
Dan, don't open the door.
Don't worry about me, darling. Big Dan's got everything under control.
Dan?
A joke?
Dan?
That's weird.
It's basically porn, this version.
It
was sort of like this idea that someone else watches quite voyeuristic, yes, in a way.
This is a 90-minute vagina shot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's just so gratuitously like on the nose.
It's like a compilation of cum shots.
Oh, whoa, Jesus.
Really?
No wonder I rated explicit on iTunes.
Review and rate us on iTunes. 5 stars, please.
5 stars, please. Thank you. Rate and follow. So, yeah, after that, shit starts to hit the fan a little bit, doesn't it?
Yes.
Everyone involved, including the director, realises we're in the last act and we need to fucking get our foot down a little bit.
And
it just, bit of shit being thrown at the walls. So the babysitter meets a pretty savage end. I think she's stood at the sink, and her hand reaches up through the sink.
Yeah, her hand reaches up through it, and then she just decays.
Yeah.
And with her face melted off when she's rediscovered by the kid.
Yeah.
Yep,
nice little like horror moment that kind of reminds us that we are actually in a horror film.
Yep. Yeah.
More naff CGI, but that is what it is. So then it's kind of... The scene now is the rescue of the child, basically, isn't it? Which is, again, very close to the original, but probably slightly... This is probably one of the scenes that are directly ripped from the original that are done a little bit better than some of the other ones. It's not as horrendous.
Yeah.
You know, thing, Dave?
What, in terms of...
In terms of it's, you know, it's not exactly a weatherman getting set on fire and thrown through a door.
No, this is quite okay. In the original, like, fucking Tommy Atkins and... Help me out.
Jimmy Curtis,
that's the one.
Yeah.
They just kind of turn up at the door, sorted, done, we're here.
Yeah.
But in this, we've actually got a little bit of the journey involved.
Yeah.
So we've actually got some tension to build as they're trying to get there fast. Yeah.
It is
nice. It is better than... I think it's... The scene by itself, standalone, is better made, better constructed.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Mm.
For sure. Yeah. And this is kind of interspersed with Stevie... trying to get there, and she basically ends up having an accident in the fog, and her car gets knocked into some water.
Yes, mate.
And mate, this is the worst bit of the film for me. Fucking hell.
The old drowning to the bottom.
Yeah.
Is there a bit where she tries one door, it doesn't work, then she realises her other door's open anyway, so she just gives it a bit of a
hunch. There is. The bit that really hurts me here is the CGI fucking... leper ghost thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, is it trying to get in the car? Is that right?
No, is it trying to drag her down as she's escaping as well?
Possibly, Well, I mean, it's reminiscent of the Naff Rorschach CGI from House on Haunted Hill. That's the kind of level of fucking naffitude we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
And I think if we watch this again in another 5 years, or, you know, a suitable gap, as we did with House on Haunted Hill, because obviously that film's 5 years older, if we had another 5 years on this and watch it again, it'll probably look as bad, if not worse, I think.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, there's no HD release of this yet.
Not that I'm aware of.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I'm sure that would look absolutely fantastic in glorious HD.
Although it's Netflix. I mean, it was on Netflix. I watched it on Netflix. Is that?
It'll HD'd be upscaled, so it's not true HD.
Mm. But it was bad enough, mate.
Yeah.
It was bad enough.
Yeah. And well, speaking of Naff,
the rest of the film.
Back in the house, the fog gets in, and so the kid basically runs away and escapes. And somehow he's able to barricade himself in the room and keep him out by sellotaping the edges of the door.
Man.
For fuck's sake.
It's
quite clear that the script had no ideas what to do. Could have literally done anything. We could have barricaded furniture against all the cracks. Literally anything. And it's like...
It's the way he gets the tape out. He's like, oh, what shall I use? Oh, just the shitty kiddie tape that mom lets me have. And when he's putting it down, he's like, fuck him.
It's not even
he's had the best idea ever.
It's not even the proper sellotape. It's that like annoying one with the white back stuff, which doesn't even stick down properly most of the time.
It's kiddie tape.
Yeah, it's fucking...
It's, I don't know. given that I work, my background in DIY stores,
yes,
you know, I've worked in them. That tape is the kind of tape that you use to, if you were painting a room and you wanted to not get your paint on the ceiling, you'd put that tape down.
To keep your edges tight. It's masking tape.
Yeah. Because it's so shit, it doesn't stick enough to rip the paint off the ceiling. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
So you've basically got the shittest tape in the world doing a job that, as you say, Wilson, any logical person would just fucking barricade it.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Fucking hell.
Fucking idiot.
So then we was off to officially the final act now, because all our players are together in the weird museum thing.
Yeah.
The fog rolls in and tags out the statue, as predicted.
Yeah.
Not that that's fucking contrived at all.
Yeah.
And then we get them sort of saying, right, we'll barricade the place.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, at last, someone's fucking had the idea to barricade somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Too late, no dice, in comes the fog through the windows.
Yeah, no problem.
And then we get, I'm gonna say kill of the week on this.
Yep.
Not many contenders,
okay.
But Father Malone's tag out on this is pretty good. So the ghosts smash all the like glass display cabinets around him.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got more. Let's ignore the shit CGI for a second.
Yeah, please do.
And it's all swirling around him, and then in slow motion, the glass sort of passes through him. And then we go
which
back
is
to.
Which is kind of cool.
Which
it?
Is all right.
It was good in concepts. It for CGI got away from me.
Yeah. It did. But
it did. Unfortunately,
you've got to compare it to the rest of the film.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah. It was a lot better than. I can't remember who it was now. There's another death where it's literally gets blown out of a museum.
That's Maggie Grace's mother. She just flies out the window.
No, I mean, there's one where it's just like literally like being pushed along.
The old man,
someone winds up in graveyard. It's just like must have been rolling along for like 500 yards.
Yeah.
Just there's stupid.
There was a lot of rolling there. Yeah.
Rolling.
What? And it was very unsatisfying at the end as well. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that particular death, because that I think his being blown from the fucking museum all the way to the cemetery is purely to get Tom Welling and Maggie Grace in the cemetery
for
the end of the film.
Yeah, we're just moving it along.
That's just moving, literally just moving it along.
So yeah, so just thinking of a screenwriter then,
yeah.
Why didn't we put the statue in the cemetery to commemorate the dead people?
Oh, it's like... Dave, you talk about this a lot, and you're quite right too. In geography, is something you talk about a lot. You've talked about in previous podcasts.
Geography is something that I noticed it straight away because I've got a background in working on martial arts films as well. Not martial arts myself, but I notice it when someone I'm working with does it.
Yeah,
and that's to establish everyone in the room, or it can be a town or a city.
Yeah,
to take it wider, and you need to everything that you're going to use in the room.
Yeah.
Or anything that's going to be an obstacle needs to be introduced early. It's foreshadowing, it's set up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in this instance, based on we're assuming that they've thought about setting this up as a final sequence, geographically, would you not have just put the graveyard next to the fucking museum thing?
Yeah.
That would probably save the fucking, like... the blowing of the fucking old man across the entire town. I just had visions of like a ghost with you know them big leaf blowers, and big fucking flymo things just blasting an old man along.
In terms of sequences, it's probably one of the most ridiculous ones I've ever seen from a semi-professional film.
Yeah, you know? I mean what I would have done straight away was they used the money they got from the ship they burnt to build a church in a town. Well, maybe you built a new church in that time. Let's have the museum and the church with a statue outside. Graveyard, done. It's all in a big line.
Yep,
done.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And walk through it, boss fight at the end, done.
Very good.
Absolutely agree.
One thing to say, just for anyone who hasn't watched along at home, I mean, we talk about why the ghosts have come to Kilmore, and that's basically that the people... from 1871, or what have you, were very bad men. They actually invade that burning ship was actually invaded by all the town's grandfathers, apparently.
Yeah, the founders of the island got on the ship, stole the ship, and then burnt the ship.
Yeah, yeah. They just looted, probably pillaging, raping, what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and murder as well, because the woman got thrown overboard.
Yeah.
You know,
they're bad men, Willie.
Yeah, they were very bad men. We should not do it again, ever. Bad boys. No.
What you gonna do?
But what are the townspeople gonna do when the ghosts come for you?
No.
Yeah. So like we have got that story. But the problem is, up until this point, I don't really, even by the end of the film, I don't really know who the people on the boat are.
No.
Or why they're on the boat.
Then it's never really explained, apart from...
There was some throwaway dialogue, but...
Yeah, there's a throwaway flashback, which half and half explains it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just assumed that you've watched the original, in a way, I think, yeah, in a lot of these sequences.
There is a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird. I mean, should we talk about the ending?
Because yeah, go on,
Andrew.
I feel like it's got to end at some point, and, like... It was fucking weird as shit, wasn't it, basically, the ending? So what I took from it was that she was either the reincarnation of or had some mystical connection to Blake's missus, in the same way as Rachel Weisz had this weird connection in The Mummy Returns.
Yeah.
And she's chosen to follow the path of her ancestor, or the part of her ancestor that's within her, has taken over, and she's gone off with it. Like,
problematic because Maggie Grace's duplicate on the boat dies on the boat.
Yes.
And therefore has no descendants.
Yes.
No. Just a bit. But, I mean, the impression I got...
What?
I mean, there must be some sort of DNA bollocks involved. But the reason why they've gone for Shannon from Lost is because blonde hair, blue eyes... Just like the woman on the boat. Yeah, you'll do. And because she's... because, obviously, well, they're all descendants of people who pillaged the boat. I just got the impression when, okay, you stole a wife from me, I'm going to steal your...
She just happens to be played by girlfriend. The same actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll steal your girlfriend from you instead. Yeah, that's the impression I got.
But then happily goes with him once she's a ghost, sort of thing. So, like, was she...
She's just a tramp.
Oh, no, because, like, the boat, the Elizabeth Dane, is not from that island. It's hinted out that it's from the mainland, and...
Wait, there's another island with the others.
Oh, my God, oh, fucking hell. So, like, I'm suggesting, basically, that the boat sailed from New York... And
I hope you hove that bit, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah. And Shannon from Lost also says she doesn't belong on the island and she's been in New York. I don't know. I'm trying to imply maybe she's fucking adopted or something. Anything. I'm trying to make a link.
Yeah.
Like, she could have been a kid that got left behind before the boat.
It's just fucking contrived bollocks.
Okay. I think I've got the explanation.
Go on.
Black smoke monster.
Yeah.
Done.
Yes.
Done.
Yes.
Done.
Polar bears.
Done. So, yeah. So
shall we just get to the end? So the fog. Now she's happily wed as a ghost bride or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the fog recedes, and then we get Selma Blair recapping everything, and she gives the same speech as in the original.
Yes.
But it makes no sense because she witnessed everything that happened, and she was like, "Well, you know, the series of events will may never know why it happened."
Yeah.
But you were the same character at the start of the film, telling us that you were related to one of the four men involved at the start. So what are you talking about, love?
And you just, like, literally watched everything that happened.
Yeah.
You know most of what happened, really, if we're being honest.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, I'm just going to wrap this up a little bit and give my thoughts, and then you guys can chip in with yours.
Yeah.
Does anyone care to hazard a guess as to how much the budget was for this film? Bearing in mind it's 2005.
High or low?
Well, I mean, based on what you've seen and the level of production and the level of quality...
Is it going to surprise me?
I would say 20.
I'd say 45.
18, which I still think's a lot.
That is a lot.
I still think's a lot.
For 2000, no, that sounds about right, actually, for 2005, especially with... 20 million's quite low, and like, it's when you get up to 30 that it starts to become, like...
Yeah, but for a film in the horror genre, I think that's quite a high budget for 2005.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to compare it against some other films. I'll maybe go away and do that. I've not done it in advance.
Those 2005 IMAX won't pay for themselves, will they?
Well, no, exactly, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think they had enough money to produce something better than this, I guess is what I'm saying. I think it was the most generic, bland, completely devoid of any kind of atmosphere and suspense which the original is marked for.
Yeah.
Remake I've ever seen in my life. I think it's so boring.
Yeah.
It's untrue. And they and the fact that the beautiful, beautiful soundtrack to the original, which I personally think is John Carpenter's best soundtrack, has been replaced by fucking shit like Fallout Boy and Jamiroquai. Why breaks my fucking heart. That's just my opinion anyway. Dave?
One thing that we noted quite early on when we were watching it, because we had it cranked up quite loud, as we always do when we're watching films, the reason, well, one of the reasons that the film flatlines persistently is because none of the scares land very well. And none of them land very well is because the sound mix is flat.
Right.
So the scene where, say, they're in a flashback on the boat trying to get away and the hand comes out the water.
Yeah.
We had it really fucking loud.
Yeah.
No jump at all. Every time, like, if anyone's watching along with this, just kind of make note of all the jump scares and how they're just at the same level as everything else.
Yeah.
It, the whole film is just flat.
Yeah.
It just drifts through.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really bizarre.
I'll put some examples and clips through as we go through.
Yeah.
But fucking hell, it's fucking bland.
Yeah.
I've got particularly bitter memories of this. Watched it with an ex-girlfriend when it first came out. Bought it on Skybox Office. Thought it was the original.
Oh dear.
Brilliant, you're in for a treat. This film's amazing.
Oh dear.
And then this came on. And then no matter how many times I said, I thought it was the fucking original, all right. Yeah, the relationship was pretty much over at that point.
So it's the fog's fault, really?
It's the fog's fault, yeah, but that's fine.
We live and learn.
Live and learn.
Chris Wilson, what did you think? Final thoughts?
You just wonder why it exists, really, don't you? I mean, by the time 2005 rolled around, DVDs were pretty cheap. Just go buy the original. I mean, there's absolutely no reason, apart from, oh, look, it's a bit newer, that anyone would want to see this, when you could quite easily go see the original, which, like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of the world of the original.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I wasn't this time. Maybe I just wasn't in the right mood for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, there's still a lot more going on in the original, which is just non-existent here. Or they don't even attempt. Like, the atmosphere, it's just, as you said, it's just so bland and generic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just feels like a cash transaction in a way. It's,
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Someone had thought, I've got $18 million here, I want to see this turn into 40 million. There you go. Done.
which, by spooky coincidence, is pretty much exactly what the film is.
Oh, nice.
So, well done.
Thank you.
I've just looked that up. I guess the only thing left to do then is throw the old shit and the popcorn out there. We'll stick with you first, Chris Wilson. What are you putting on it?
Controversy for shit, I'd just go with 6. Not that high. I mean, if the CGI was...
Yeah.
Pretty naff, but I don't think, technically speaking, it was a bad film.
It's just a film that exists.
It was what it was. You know, it's beige on top of beige.
Yeah, sure.
Really. Popcorn rating, I'll say 4, maybe. I'll stick with 4. It's just...
4. 6 and 4.
Yeah, 6 and 4. I just...
Pretty generic, isn't it, across the board, really?
Yeah, unless I go and do another horror remake podcast, I don't think I'll be watching this ever again.
No, me neither. Me neither, and it's my fucking choice. Sorry again. Dave, what are you throwing on it?
Just so you know, by the way, for 10 million more, you get District 9.
There you go, you see. And how many years later was District 9 made as well?
4 years later.
Yeah. There you go.
10 million more... Fuck.
Yeah.
You get a story, you get good CGI.
Yeah,
you know? I like to make that comparison.
Yeah, it still stands up as well. I watched it recently.
Of course it does, yeah. Blu-ray, it still looks great.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Shit and popcorn then, love.
Right.
Hit us with it.
I'm going to give it the boredom factor, 8 turds.
8 turds, high scoring.
Obviously, I do love the original. I'm not going to let my love of the original colour this one. But as a standalone film... It's a fucking stretch, and it is tedious.
Yeah.
It is just a packet of cream crackers, and you're done, and you think, oh, great, and then someone offers you another one. So,
agreed.
Popcorn rating.
Popcorn, yeah.
2?
Yeah, it's poor. Poor.
I don't want to be too savage on it, but at the same time, it's just... It just fucking happens.
Yeah, it's the thing that happens.
Yeah.
Literally, that's the only way you can describe it. I mean, for me...
I could be eating sand...
And have more entertainment. Yeah.
I
mean, for me, I'll probably go I'll probably go 7 turds.
Yep.
I think. And yep. I'll probably go...
That's a clogged toilet, that is, anyway.
Yeah, it is. And I'll probably take it to a 4 on the popcorn scale.
Okay, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's the definition of middle of the road, even by our podcast standards.
Yes, mate, it is the hardcore Holly of movies.
It is, yeah.
It's a jobber, mate.
It fucking well is. And on that very late wrestling reference, Dave, you're next.
I'm next, mate. I'm going to just pop over there and get mine.
Yeah, you pop over there. I'm just going to see if Wilson's still alive after that experience.
I've not wrapped it up, guys, so I'm just going to bomb it in front of
you. That's all right, bomb it in front of our faces. It can't be.
Look over there.
We will look over there, yeah.
Cover our eyes, and we will get a big surprise.
It cannot be any worse than the fog. I'm confident.
Covered. Right, I'm going to bring everything back up with a bit of fun.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right, okay. Everyone's eyes still closed, yeah?
Closed.
Yeah,
closed.
All right, let's go.
Right.
Look.
Oh, damn! Oh,
yeah.
Yes. It's Blade DOS.
Yes. Technically horror.
Technically horror, absolutely.
Directed by Del Toro.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I watched this recently and saw it in CEX. I thought,
yes, mate.
That was fucking good fun. Well, shit, but fun.
Yeah, that I've not seen it for a few years, but I remember it being fun.
Yeah.
Excellent work.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave Walker.
Ron Perlman, the cat from Red Dwarf. Everyone's in there. I don't know much, Blade, but I know about killing vampires. Beautiful.
Why is Rob's DVD box bigger than mine?
Well, fucking because...
It's not about size, Wilson.
Well, you can have the one with bigger girth if you want. He's got 2 discs, but...
It was a 4-discer.
She was going to put 4 discs in there. I was like, the fuck is on there?
She was going to put 2... She was going to put 4 Blade 2s in there.
Give them to your friends and family.
Do you want the bigger one? You've got a booklet, though.
He's got 2. You've got a flippy thing.
Yeah, and you got a booklet.
Yeah, but like with a physical actual box, you
know. But it comes with the manual. It's worth more.
Yeah, yeah. That's and, the proper one.
And we can see what else is coming soon to DVD. Like Defiance,
a Final Destination, man.
Yeah. Or Frequency, starring Dennis Quaid.
Oh Jesus, Dennis Quaid, good God!
What the hell is this? Tumbleweeds. I can't even see who that is. Academy Award. That's all I can see from that. Take a guess.
No, I can't even take a guess on that. No idea.
No idea.
Well, I guess on that bombshell. It'll be Blade 2 next, and once again, really, really sorry for the fog. It's bye from me.
Bye from me.
Some bullweed, eh?
Say bye!
That looks really good.
Don't forget, you can follow us and keep up with all our updates at Cinemortuary on Twitter, / Cinemortuary on Facebook, and of course, at Cinemortuary on Instagram. I don't know how you do pictures of podcasts, but we're going to do that anyway.